Welcome to the sixth episode of the Indigenous Hour. Today we are podcasting from Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. The reason why we're here is that today a high-profile event was held here to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and also to present results of a two-year Crimean Tatar public diplomacy project led by the Estonian Institute of Human Rights that I have also been involved in. One of the speakers of this event was Mr. Boris Babin, who is our guest of the hour and with whom we will be discussing issues concerning indigenous peoples of Ukraine. Welcome, Boris.
Good day.
So Boris is the first non-indigenous guest of the Indigenous Hour, but there are solid reasons for that. Firstly, as a professor of law, he's one of the best experts in Ukraine and probably the best in mainland Ukraine today of the international human rights law as it relates to indigenous peoples. Boris has held many important positions as ad hoc expert to OSCE and the Council of Europe, and is currently serving as the permanent representative of the President of Ukraine in the Autonomous Republic of Crimea. But more importantly for the audiences of this podcast, Boris has been a thought leader in the process of drafting Ukraine's legislation related to indigenous peoples, and he was the leading force behind translating the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples into the Ukrainian language. While Boris himself is not indigenous and therefore cannot speak on behalf of indigenous peoples of Ukraine, he certainly is not only an expert but also a friend of Ukraine's indigenous peoples, and this is what matters the most for this podcast. So let's get started. First, I would like to hear your thoughts and reflections about the importance of the UN Declaration on this day today, 10th anniversary. What is your overall view? Why do you think this document is so important for indigenous people?
Well, the declaration adopted by General Assembly in 2007 is not only a political document. We may now compare it with Declaration on Human Rights adopted by the General Assembly in 1948, as it has not only politic but also judicial obligatory power. Today there is discussion on global level between specialists in international law what is the legal nature of obligatory character of declaration. Is it an international custom, for example, that was composed in area of indigenous rights, or is it a norms of erga omnes, of universal norm of international law? But anyway, any of such theoretical position has one clear consequence. Declaration is not only a recommendations, a set of certain minds, it is obligatory document that must be implemented and realized in national policy and also in international relations.
So how do you respond to states, for example Russia, who formally state their support for some of the articles of the UN Declaration, like for example cultural rights or linguistic rights, but dismissing others, especially those rights that are concerned with the rights to land and economic rights?
Well, this act is a complex of norms, and we can't accept with some proposals, some provisions of declarations and deny others. The Russian Federation still does not have clear position on the executing declaration provisions. But anyway, when we had judicial internal process referred to the ban of Majlis of Crimean Tatar people, it was started in the illegal court in Crimea created by Russia, but it was further transferred to Moscow to the Supreme Court of Russian Federation. And in Supreme Court of Russian Federation, the appeal was given by the advocate of Majlis, and in this appeal they told to the highest court of Russia that Russian powers violated the declaration provisions. And highest court of Russia analyzed this declaration. He came to wrong summary. He told that provisions of declarations were not violated. We know that were violated, but for this it is not the main in this issue. the main is that Supreme Court of Russian Federation in 2016 accepted the judicial volume of declaration. He analyzed it like convention. He did not told it's not obligatory. He told it is very good, but we did not violate it. So we may say that highest judicial institution of Russian Federation accepted the judicial importance of the declaration.
That's very interesting. But of course, we are here today to discuss not so much Russia's policy towards indigenous peoples, but because we are in Kiev and Ukraine, our focus is going to be Ukraine.
Yes.
And let's begin by perhaps discussing the history of Ukraine, the state of Ukraine, and its policy towards indigenous peoples. And let's do it in a way a little bit like a chronological order. So I think we can divide this modern Ukraine, modern state of Ukraine, into two stages. One is from 1991 until 2014, the Euromaidan, and of course that culminated in the annexation of Crimea, and then the Ukraine after that.
Related to the indigenous issues.
Yes. Yes.
Well, this problem is just a little more complicated.
Yeah.
As Ukraine began to be independent state in 1991, and soon in the Constitution of Ukraine in 1996, the rights of indigenous peoples were recognized officially. Ukraine is one of the states of minority of the state of the world that recognized officially the rights of indigenous peoples in its highest law. It was in 1996. Alice, after this formal recognition, Ukraine did not establish a list of indigenous peoples residing in Ukraine. Ukraine did not adopt a special law on their right, and it was a key problem till 2014. More, in 2007, Ukraine abstained from voting for declaration in the General Assembly. Anyway, in this period, we may analyze policy of Ukraine referring to the Crimean Tatar people and to the non-numerous peoples of Crimea, Karaites and Krimchaks, and we may point that Ukraine de facto recognized some of those rights like indigenous ones. It was done before 2014. For example, Ukraine officially recognized the right of majority of Crimean Tatar people to participate in UN bodies related to the indigenous issues in 1995. It was de facto agreement with that fact that Crimean Tatar people is indigenous one. But it was not formal recognition, it was such half recognition, but it was done before 2014. More, I may told you that after declaration was adopted by General Assembly, approximately from 2009, the days of indigenous peoples that were established by the United Nations in the 8th of August were officially recognized in Ukraine on local level. Activists of Crimean Tatar people and Karaites and Krimchak people in Crimea every year organized events referred to this date, and these events were organized with cooperation of local state authorities. Local state authorities in Crimea, in local communas of, for example, Yalta, Sudak, Evpatoria, Simferopol, before occupation and annexation, recognized this event as event and recognized the rights of Crimean Tatars, Karaites and Krimchak celebrated officially. It was a little step, but it was a step to the further recognition of the ethnicities like indigenous peoples. Alas, the Russian intervention, aggression and annexation stopped those processes. They were not very fast, but they were before annexation. And really, after 2014, Ukrainian parliament adopted official statement and recognized Crimean Tatar people as indigenous and recognized the declaration as document that has importance for Ukraine.
Yes, but before we go on to that period, I still would like to stay a little bit in the history before 2014. But maybe you can give your own personal view on who are the indigenous peoples of Ukraine.
Well, according to the practice of United Nations, according to the standards reflected in the period that was before adoption declaration, in experts' provisions of United Nations procedure referring to drafting declaration and establishing voluntary fund for indigenous, according to those standards, we may fix that three Crimean ethnic groups, Crimean Tatars, Karaites, and Krimchaks, are indigenous peoples in understanding of United Nations. On the mainland of Ukraine, some ethnic group have some features that allow us to discuss them as possible indigenous peoples.
Can you mention those groups?
For example, Gagauzes in Odessa region or Ruthenians in Transcarpathia regions. But those ethnic groups have, on this moment, as for me, did not have clear full set of features of indigenous people. But Karaites, Krimchaks, and Crimean Tatars has a full set of features, and exactly these three ethnic groups demand to be recognized as indigenous and have self-recognition as indigenous. It's very important.
Yeah, and self-identification, right?
Yes.
So in case of Crimean Tatars, it's obvious and well documented. You know, their Majlis has consistently identified Crimean Tatars as indigenous people. But how about the other two groups you mentioned, Karaites and Krimchaks? Do they have some documents, or is there some evidence that they self-identify and want to be treated as indigenous people?
Well, the key issue is that those two ethnic groups are in the extremely hard demographic position. There is approximately 500 of Karaites and only 200 of Krimchaks in Ukraine. Most of them reside in occupied Crimea. Before war, Crimean Karaites organized the body of self-government of Karaites people. It was Ulubolik High Council, and this council demanded from Ukrainian authorities and from world society to recognize Crimean Karaites like indigenous peoples, and representatives of Crimean Karaites as Krimchaks and of course as Crimean Tatars took part in the events of United Nations referred to the indigenous issues. And they were de facto recognized by the international community of indigenous peoples as indigenous ones. But Crimean Krimchaks have no own self-governing body, but they had a civil society organization, as they're too numerous to have own bodies. And this organization demanded also to recognize this ethnic group as indigenous. More, those two groups were recognized as separate nations by the legal acts of Crimean Khanate, of Russian Empire, of Soviet Union, and even in independent Ukraine. In 1992, the special act was adopted by the government of Crimean Autonomy, and in this act, they were named like small peoples of Crimea. So we have even the legal grounds, non-full, but partial legal grounds for recognition of these ethnic groups like indigenous peoples.
So let's right now maybe focus more on, again, this past policies of Ukraine on indigenous peoples. And it remains a fact that Ukraine abstained from the voting on the UN declaration back in 2007, just as Russia did and some other countries. What is your interpretation? Why did Ukraine abstain at that time?
Alice, on that time we have internal problems of some political parties, of some political groups that were too afraid even of mentioning of indigenous somewhere in Ukrainian legislation. It was one complicated issue. The other problem was that Ukrainian external policy was tightly connected with Russian one. We have proofs of this. For example, one Crimean Tatar non-government organization were banned from the list of possible participants of Economic and Social Council of United Nations by this common demand of ministries of foreign affairs of Russia and of Ukraine. It was in 2008, and both Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia and Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine at the time constated that this organization is so-called extremist one. This is a clear reflection of policy of the time referred to the indigenous peoples. Oh, but it is not a complex policy. I mentioned before some other state power bodies do more balanced policy and de facto recognize it, those people as indigenous one, even exceptionally on the local level.
So when we think about Crimean Tatars, then of course the Crimean Tatar history is dramatic and tragic in many ways. They have gone through a genocide and they have been occupied by the Russian Empire and later the Soviet Union under the Stalinist orders, deported basically an entire nation from their homeland. 200,000, approximately half of them died on the way to places of deportation. So it's and at that time, one of the accusations against the entire Crimean Tatar people was that they were supposedly collaborators of the Nazis. You know, this argument has been, of course, overruled and debunked, you know, since then. But time and again, Crimean Tatars have been seen as some kind of a threat by whoever is ruling over them. And I have also heard from just informal conversations with some former Ukrainian diplomats that before 2014, also there was this phenomenon that the state of Ukraine did not fully trust Crimean Tatars or saw them as some kind of a threat. And for me, it has always been a bit of a mystery. So what kind of a threat were Crimean Tatars perceived as? Because to me, they seem rather harmless and well-meaning people.
Well, the key problem of this story is in history. As Crimean Peninsula was state de facto established by Crimean Tatar people, and this state was soon after in the 19th, 18th century colonized, annexed by Russian Empire, Crimea was typical colony of European country, and relation with population of this colony and metropole was as with other European countries. That is the key issue of such strange relation. Other issue is of hard story of relation between Crimean Khanate and Moscovite kingdom. As before annexation, there was a huge period of concurrence between those two states on influence on Ukraine region and in Caucasus region. It was a long fight, and that's why Crimean Tatars are historically reflected as enemies by Russian Empire. That is a key mental reason that has roots in Russian state, not in Ukrainian one. But as in our state, alas, we have too much friends of so-called Russian vault. They reflect this Russian propaganda and they reflect this Russian policy still this day.
Okay, but do you see that there was anything rational in this mistrust by the newly independent Ukraine towards Crimean Tatars, or was it, as you explained, just some kind of a relic of the past?
First relic of the past, and also the issue of coming back home from deportation, as Ukraine de facto got a problem, a practical problem, to give lands, to give property. They had right on this, and Ukrainian state had obligation, but de facto to satisfy those rights and execute own obligation was very hard. And that's why Crimean Tatars were watched as problem, not enemies like for us, but objective problem to settle them. It was also a reason for Ukrainian government, well, we need some money to build houses, to get some water, some electricity. We have hard years in 19th, and it was hard period for Ukraine, and this problem was one of the key problems for modern Ukrainian state in Crimea. It was half solved. It was not solved in common, but it is solved in half. But this solving also caused understanding Crimean Tatars maybe like friends, But in the same time, like objective problem, we need to spend money, we need to do something for it. Any state executive person will see it like problem.
Or inconvenience or some kind of a burden on the state. Yeah?
Yes.
And did the internal politics within Crimea that had a special status, of course, within Ukraine as an autonomous republic of Crimea with its own politics and own ethnic issues and so on, did that also somehow influence the national policy of Ukraine from Kiev towards Crimean Tatars?
Well, the issue of Ukrainian autonomy is too complicated. Before Second World War, in Soviet period, such autonomy was established de facto as Crimean Tatar autonomy. When Crimean Tatars were illegally deported, the autonomy was cancelled. It was established as usual region. And when Ukraine got sovereignty in 1990, it was a usual oblast region. But in that time, we had one situation of coming back of Crimean Tatars to Crimea that started 2 years before Ukrainian independence. And other problem is mapped separatism of Russians in Crimea aggravated from Moscow. And those two factors were contrary, but both of them demanded autonomy. And when Ukraine agreed to reset autonomy of Crimea in the January of 1991, Ukraine even was not independent at the time. It was de jure Republic of Soviet Union that established autonomy in Crimea, re-established as it was before 1945. And nobody determined, is it autonomy for Russians that were in majority and still are in majority in Crimea, or is it autonomy for Crimean Tatars coming back from Crimea? Nobody knew how much of them will come. 200,000 or 400,000 or 600,000. Nobody knew this. And only 200,000 came back. Some of them live still in Middle Asia, in Central Asia. That was in 1991. The legal nature of this autonomy was uncertain. And in 1992, Russian activists generated and controlled by Moscow demanded full autonomy of Crimea like own state, and Ukraine was too weak, and for some period Ukraine agreed on it, and there was no place in this autonomy for Crimean Tatars. But soon after, Ukraine became a little stronger, and Crimean Tatars establishing in Crimea became a little more politically stronger. And from 1994, two processes began. First process, rising of influence of Crimean Tatars institution in Crimea. And second process, establishing of adequate state control of Ukraine over Crimea. Mm. And those procedures was finished in 1998, when new constitution of Crimea, fully reflecting the constitution of Ukraine of 1996, was adopted by voting of Supreme Council of Crimea, and was the final point of Crimean political crisis. And from 1998, the policy of Ukraine and Crimea was so. First, we have Crimean autonomy, copy-pasting the frame of Soviet autonomy, Supreme Council, that formal government.
Like a republic, like a Soviet republic.
Like kind of. Autonomous Soviet.
Autonomous republic.
Yeah. Autonomous republic. Mm-hmm. Like autonomous republic, and in the same time in Crimea, Majlis as elected body of Kurultai, and Kurultai as elected Congress of Crimean Tatars acted, and local Majlis acted. They were not recognized officially de jure, but they were recognized de facto. More, Crimean Tatars has own deputies in parliament of Crimea, and as a rule, had own deputies in parliament of Ukraine. It allowed to have some tools of influence for Crimean Tatars as on Crimean policy, so on the all-state policy. That's why we can mention that as Crimean autonomy was not Crimean Tatars, but it was not Russian or other one, it was mixed autonomy. And till the beginning of 2014, such situation was absolutely, not absolutely, but in common, it was normal for development of Ukrainian state. This statute did not cause large problems. The largest problems was only in non-recognition the special rights of Crimea and other people in Crimea, but not in the formal institutions in Crimea.
Okay, so before 2014, before annexation of Crimea by Russia, Crimean Tatars were represented often at the UN venues, like the Permanent Forum and so on, and they were a known factor there all along. But then, during that time, usually those Crimean Tatars would come to New York, for example, and criticize Ukraine for not doing enough,
for
not fully respecting their rights. So how do you, in hindsight, comment, or how do you view the Ukraine's policy towards Crimean Tatars during that time, now that we have this benefit of knowing where, you know, what happened with Crimea in 2014?
Well, the issue of demanding of recognition and execution of Crimean Tatars' rights, those demands were in United Nations from 1994, I hope. And as in common, the answer of Ukraine was silence. And there was not this political influence, there were not criminal cases for such demands. Ukrainian policy in common was tolerate to Crimean Tatars activists. It was not dangerous for them, but in the same time, it did not cause the full recognition of Crimean Tatar rights. And it was still 1914. I think if even the state policy of Ukraine was not such, even if Ukraine recognized Crimean Tatars' right before 2014, it would not stop Russian aggression anyway. Because Crimean Tatars are in minority in Crimea anyway. And anyway, if you'll have democratic procedures, a main power body institution in Crimea are not formed and will not form it by Crimean Tatars only. That is objective reality. That's why we can say that absence of this law on indigenous peoples was the reason of occupation annexation, or simplified this occupation or annexation.
Okay, but on the other hand, I have heard Crimean Tatar national leaders, including Mustafa Jamilev, say that if Ukraine had treated Crimean Tatars better before 2014, then possibly Crimea would not have been occupied. So you would disagree with that?
No, I disagree with it.
Yeah.
It's a discussional issue. Ukrainian policy was not like genocide, you know. It was not executing all set of indigenous right, but in common, it was not a huge discrimination. So this huge discrimination, absence of this huge discrimination, caused the absence of huge social tensions. There was not inter-ethnic tensions in Crimea before occupation. And this absence of inter-ethnic conflict, it was instability in Crimea, caused, for example, the non-Russians came to Crimea, they was able to change all powers and set to the thrones on Crimean cabinets and offices freaks, as normal politics is Ukrainian or Crimean Tatar, even or Russian, did not work with the occupants. And if we'll see Crimean Tatars, for example, of course, main leaders of Crimean Tatar people now on the mainland, but we may see also in the same time some members, former members of Majlis, collaborating with Russian government. So even if Majlis members collaborate with Russians, some of them, how can we expect none of such non-collaboration with other persons? So it is very complicated issues for me. It was not so simple to recognize indigenous rights and stop the war. I often, when I hear the discussion, I propose it compare with situation of Second World War in Pacific Ocean. For example, Japan's invaded Hawaiian Islands on Pearl Harbor. Was Hawaiian indigenous statute recognized on this moment or not, it would not stop Japanese bombers. It is other issue and other problem, and the and it have other summary of this. The recognition of Crimean Tatar people as indigenous is not a tool of the occupation. It's other issue and other situation. We must recognize those rights and those statute anyway. It is not connected with the occupation issue. Mm. We must deoccupy Crimea by complex of war, politic, economic tools, but not by Crimean Tatar people who is in minority in Crimea.
Yeah, it and is, who anyway, you know, mostly pro-Ukraine. So
yes, it's absolutely
them who are the problem.
Amoralistic to wait from Crimean Tatar people to deoccupy Crimea, sitting and fighting for it in Kyiv. Alice, a lot of Ukrainian politicians do so. He said, Crimean Tatars, let them deoccupy Crimea. We recognize it, Mejlis. What should we do more? It was. It is very sad, but it is real position of some politics.
Yeah. So today we're not really going much more into this deoccupation issue. I think for that we need another podcast, another episode,
course,
if ever. But coming back to the indigenous people's policy upon Ukraine. So it's 2014, February. Russia occupies Crimea, soon thereafter annexes it to the Russian Federation. Crimean Tatars are the main group in Crimea who are resisting this illegal act by the Russian Federation. They show themselves as the most pro-Ukrainian force in Crimea, while Ukrainian Navy and so on, they basically leave and surrender, right?
Everybody surrendered.
Yeah.
Everybody surrendered.
But Crimean Tatars didn't.
They did not, but they have no guns, they have no
yeah.
official statute.
Okay, but at least their civic position was very clear and that was pro-Ukrainian.
In common, they were pro-Ukrainian, of course.
Yes.
90% of them.
Yes, yes. So, very soon thereafter, Ukraine suddenly shifts its indigenous people's policy. The Verkhovna Rada declared Crimean Tatars, I don't know whether it was also Krimchaks and Karaites.
No, it is a hard problem. The same act as statement for Crimean Tatars was registered in Verkhovna Rada in 2015 and registered in second time in 2016 for Karaites and Krimchaks, and it is still not voted, Alice.
Okay, but Crimean Tatars were declared indigenous peoples of Crimea and Ukraine.
They were declared, recognized it, and voted.
And that was, I believe, March 2014,
yes.
Right? Basically, right, immediately after occupation.
Yes, 2 days before Zaniga. The recognition was in 20th of March, and the procedure of finalizing the annexation was in 21st of March.
Yes, and then 1 month goes by, and Ukraine publicly supported the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, sent a letter to the UN Secretary General, and gave a speech at the Permanent Forum in May 2014, and became the last UN member state to publicly endorse the UN Declaration, which it still remains as such. Cynics would say that, well, this was just some kind of realpolitik by Ukraine, that indeed, like in fact, their thinking or policy may not have changed, but they're just now doing this, making these declarations, and where were they before? This is also what Russia, by the way, you know, says at the UN, kind of criticizing Ukraine for its pre-2014 policy towards Crimean Tatars. So why did it take the loss of Crimea for Ukraine to begin recognizing Crimean Tatars, you know, according to the way Crimean Tatars expected? Was it just some kind of realpolitik, or was it actual shift in thinking and in policy by a kind of a new Ukraine?
I think that this act was first of all a reflection of democratic changes in Ukraine that happened after the revolution. After the revolution of dignity. But in the same time, of course, it was a reaction of occupation and illegal annexation of Crimea. Alice, it is so. We have the same example, for example, in Colombia, when Colombia recognized indigenous peoples and force of declaration in situation of internal conflict, and de facto they used indigenous people like a tool in this conflict. But I think Ukraine is not using indigenous like a tool, but Ukraine was react of illegal actions, and unless it was done not in time, we must do it before 10 years before as minimum.
So now 3.5 years have passed since Crimea's occupation. Ukraine has had exactly this amount of time to develop maybe more specific policies and legislation to let's say support its new indigenous people's policy. What would you say, what have been the accomplishments during that time?
Well, the situation is not so simple. For example, the main step forwards is adopting a law on indigenous peoples of Ukraine reflecting the norms and provision of declarations. The first attempt was done in 2014, but those drafts registered in the March 2014 in Parliament was absolutely not adequate. For example, one draft was simple Google Translate of declaration into Ukrainian, and it was changed declaration on law of Ukraine and indigenous peoples. Of course, it was not very effective. And other problem that Crimea Tatar movement insisted that it should be separate law on statute of Crimea Tatar people without any reference to the issues of Crimea Kharids and Krimchaks. And of course it is not very good approach. And that was the reasons that such situation delayed it. And even now, in 2017, we have only one draft law registered in Ukraine, and it is a draft law on statute of Crimean Tatar people, not on statute of indigenous peoples of Ukraine. And we may fix the fact that this draft of law does not reflect the majority of provision of declaration, Alice. And this is a real situation.
Okay, so why is that? So Ukraine has endorsed the UN declaration. Why is it so that the current draft legislation only partially reflects it? And I think, what are the parts that it does not reflect
well,
the declaration?
Well, this draft was elaborated by the order of Majlis of Crimean Tatar people by group of experts. So we should ask Majlis for this.
But of course, Majlis should be in theory very interested in having the legislation be consistent with
I
the
have
declaration.
No real explanation of this fact. But if you see this draft and compare it with declaration, We see absence of majority rights, for example, right on land and right on natural sources. Those rights are not reflected in the draft, but we know that those rights are key rights for indigenous struggles all the world. And it is very strange that Ukrainian indigenous people, via its representative body, denies to demand those rights. More, I may say that even in Ukrainian legislation, we analyzed it and we proposed an alternative draft. It is not registered in parliament, but it was presented on expert mechanism of UN of indigenous and on OSCE negotiations and conferences. And this draft, of course, reflects those rights. And we saw that even modern Ukrainian civil law allows to have public property, for example, for Majlis, just changing few words in civil code. It is not a huge problem for indigenous to have own finances, statute of judicial body for Majlis and local Majlis, own rights on land, property, buildings, etc. It is not a problem. But very strange that there is nothing about it in this draft.
Okay, so my impression, this is not an expert view, but impression is that Ukraine may be taking a similar path to those countries that have indigenous peoples, but that have focused on developing a kind of a cultural autonomy. I think Finland belongs in that category, you know, where the Sami people of Finland, they do have some
cultural rights and some linguistic rights in the Sami territories of Finland, but really no rights to land territories or resources. And there are many countries like that. So could we see a similar scenario here, that Ukraine is moving towards this kind of a very limited cultural autonomy?
Well, speaking truly, Crimean Tatars had cultural autonomy in Crimea even before occupation. De jure, Crimean Tatar language was one of the official language of Autonomous Republic of Crimea. More, it was a real system of education on Crimean Tatar language and by Crimean Tatar language in Crimea. And also even Karaites and Krimchaks also had cultural and linguistic autonomy. More, ratifying European Charter on regional minority languages, Ukraine recognized Karaites, Krimchaks and Crimean Tatar languages as covered by this charter. So we may say that even without special law, today Crimean Tatars had cultural autonomy. So the issue of this law should not be in cultural autonomy, as we are a democratic country and all, even national minority, every national traditional minority with a desire to have autonomy, have de facto autonomy in Ukraine. No any problem for it. So we should not have special law for it.
So during this occupation time, Crimean Tatars, especially those in Crimea, they have been subjected to grave human rights violations by the Russian occupying authorities. There have been murders, forced disappearances, there are politically motivated detentions and trials. Punitive psychiatry in Stalin style has been used against a leading member of the Majlis, and just yesterday, Vice Chairman of the Majlis, Mr. Artem Chigoz, was sentenced to 8 years in a colony for doing what? For participating in a pro-Ukrainian rally.
Peaceful
assembly in February 2014 before Crimea was occupied. So basically for participating in a pro-Ukrainian rally on Ukrainian soil.
According to the Ukrainian laws.
Yeah. So this is all going on. And if anything, it seems to me that the situation with the human rights in Crimea is becoming even going worse. Majlis, the representative body of Crimean Tatars, has been declared an extremist organization in Russia, has been banned. So what, if anything, has Ukraine done to help Crimean Tatars currently based in Crimea? And is there even anything that Ukraine can do in this current political context?
Well, it is a very hard issue. As now we lose the war, Crimea is occupied and annexed. We have Minsk agreements and other agreements with Russia. Those agreements may be determined as partial capitulation of Ukraine. In this situation, we cannot today deoccupy Crimea, as only deoccupation may guarantee the stop of limiting civil liberties in Crimea, as those liberties are limited not only in Crimea, but also in Russian regions also. And the situation that is with Crimean Tatars has an absolutely mirror story for some other ethnic groups in the Russia as itself. So it is a key problem. But Ukraine may only use political and judicial procedures to fix those facts, to monitor them, to inform international bodies, and to use international courts to punish Russia for violation of some conventions, but only for some, as there is special mechanism in international law. For example, we can't punish Russia for violations of the Declaration of Indigenous. There is no special international body. We may also have speeches on expert mechanism on permanent forum, but not more than speech or petition. For example, this summer we hold petition for support Majlis and other indigenous structures in Crimea, signed by 22 world's recognized indigenous organizations. Anyway, we have those facts in process, for example, in the International Court of Justice, referring to the violation by Russia of International Convention of Racial Discrimination. And also we had it in the European Court of Human Rights of interstate application against Russia connected with the occupation and annexation of Crimea. All those facts will be in those procedures, and of course very important for all victims to have individual procedures in the UN bodies and also as in the European Court of Human Rights.
Yes. How about those Crimean Tatars who have been internally displaced, who have left Crimea after the occupation? I believe there are tens of thousands of Crimean Tatars like this all over Ukraine and also outside Ukraine in other countries. They have a different set of issues that they are facing, right? I mean, they have to do with getting the right documentation so that they can open their bank accounts and kind of have the same legal status, right, as anybody else. I think they have issues with, you know, finding accommodation for themselves, securing jobs, being able to preserve their culture and language in this new environment. What, in your view, are the most pressing issues facing these Crimean Tatar IDPs in mainland Ukraine?
Well, there is not much IDPs mm-hmm. on the mainland, about 10,000 of person.
Okay.
More, sorry, 20,000, about 10,000 in Kyiv, mm-hmm. about 4,000 in Lviv, and 2,500, for example, in Kherson region.
You're saying this is not many?
It's not many. Okay. As there is 2 million people residing in Crimea, mm-hmm. and 300,000 of Crimean Tatars there. We have much problems, not with IDPs, but of persons coming out and coming back to Crimea. They come out from Crimea for a few days to have documents, to have any judicial support, to have something, to have administrative services from state, and goes back. And we have thousands of these persons every day, and they change. It is a key problem, as we need to help them. Mm. IDPs reside 3 years on the mainland, and in common, there is not a lot of problem for them. Mm-hmm. As for example, they have no problem with documents, they no have no problem for searching job, and also there is a social programs of houses for them. So the main problem for Crimeans are connected not with IDPs, but of residents of occupied territory coming to the mainland for some days or months to get some help.
So what kind of help are they seeking here?
They need documents of Ukraine, legally issued. They need to have education, legally organized. For example, external mechanism to have legal diplomas. They search jobs sometimes. They coming out only to have visit to friends and other persons and come back and something happens with them. It was very complicated stories. And every story is unique, you know. Mm-hmm.
So, looking ahead, what do you think Ukraine can do to better serve its indigenous peoples, and in particular Crimean Tatars, who of course are the most populous of Ukraine's indigenous peoples?
Well, the main step today is to adopt the law on indigenous peoples of Ukraine. And according to this law, to develop strategies of help of indigenous peoples on mainland, and also some help for those who are on occupied territories. And this is the key issue, and we must concentrate our forces for elaborating the adequate draft of this law reflecting the provisions of Declaration of 2007.
And so you, in your new role as permanent representative of Ukraine's president in Crimea, what can you do in your role?
Well, I can do a lot.
Yeah.
First of all, in my internal policy, I try to implement all coherent provisions of declaration. For example, we established a full contact with local majlises, executing the principle of free prior consents. Also, I had forced my first vice representative of Crimean Tatar, according to the president's decree, according to the majlis proposition. And it's his responsibility to have communication with anybody on Crimean Tatar issue. More, now we organize civil council and collecting representatives of all the local majlis residing on the mainland of Ukraine. More, we will be a part of process of legal drafting for indigenous statute. We are now a part of reforming the constitution of Ukraine to establish there that Crimean autonomous Republic of Crimea is a form of self-determination of Crimean Tatar people and also is a tool of defense of rights of other indigenous people, also as national minorities in Crimea. And we must fix the statute of Mejlis and Kurultai in the text of constitution. Also, on the local level, we working to help with IDPs and people coming from Crimea for those problems. And also, we are trying to preserve Crimean Tatar culture on the mainland. You know, there is about 1,000 representatives of Crimean Tatars residing in Kherson region, and they have schools, they have culture centers. We support it. For example, this September, we opened first class of Crimean Tatar language teaching. It is the first class, not teaching the language, but teaching by this language.
Yeah.
And it is the only class for Ukraine, for mainland of Ukraine. It's our duty to preserve this language and their culture.
So it seems we have really a lot of work to do.
Of course.
I think I'm quite impressed by the level of ambition that you have and the how should I say this very enthusiastic can-do attitude. Is there any kind of support or that you might need in your work from the, let's say, from international side? Because, you know, we have this podcast doesn't have a huge audience, but it is quite global. So we have listeners in North America, Australia, New Zealand, and so on.
Well, I have enough support from state power of Ukraine, of course, of president of Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
It was stupid to not have such support for this job. But anyway, we'll be pleased for any help of any progressive democratic institution of the world for Crimean issues, and of course we'll be grateful for any indigenous organization for supporting the indigenous brothers in Crimea. We have website, we have Facebook page and internet, they on Russian and Ukrainian, and we are ready to communicate. We have contacts there to communicate with any organization of public or civil law referring to the indigenous issues and for Crimean issues to help us to execute our functions for defending indigenous rights, evaluation the situation in Crimea, defending human rights, etc.
Well, thank you, Boris. This was a really informative, really deep conversation, and I also hope that our listeners will appreciate that. So we were today podcasting from Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. It's September 13th, 2017, which is the 10th anniversary of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. But I would like to thank you also our listeners. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. Join the Facebook page of this podcast called Indigenous Hour. Subscribe to us also on iTunes. And so until next time. Bye.
Bye. I'm finished.
When strangers are coming, they come to your house. They kill you all and say, we're not guilty. Where's your mind? Humanity cries. You think you are gods, but everyone dies. Don't swallow my soul, our souls. Я шлома то ялмады. Мен буерде яшалмады. Я шлома то ялмады. Мен буерде яшалмады. We could build a future when people are free to live in love, the happiest time of time. Where's your heart? Humanity rise. You think you are gods, but everyone dies. Don't swallow my soul, our soul. Yeah. санаторіал маю. Мен бу ерде яшамадым. Ама-ама. Яшлым санаторіал маю. Мен бу ерде яшамадым. Ватаныма тоялмадым. Мен бу ерде яшамадым. Ватаныма тоялмадым.